The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome one and all to Cooking Like a Pro. You have found us, Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Krista.
Hello.
Hello, and welcome again to Cooking Like a Pro, 1460 AM. And, I don't know, I guess you could have found us on the 96.5 FM as well. And if you'd like to call down and chat with Ben, either on or off the air, he can take down the cooking question. We'd be happy to answer that on air. That number down here is 530-605-4567. Again, 530-605-4567. Or I guess you can go to cookinglikeapropodcast.net.
That is correct.
You can type one in there too. And I don't know. Hey, it's technology, so you already know it's, you know, well out of my league. But, I was preparing for this show, and something's been on my heart for a while to kind of chat about. And this really has to do with America was not a cornerstone for cuisine. Really never was. Now, certainly there are certain things that were made and prepared in America just kind of out of necessity more than anything else. I mean, we invented, you know, jerky, because we were crossing the Midwest, the plains, and we had to figure out a way to dehydrate things. But even that process we didn't invent. Certainly food's been dried out for an awful long time. I'll tell you, as you start to think about it, and I know that, you know, for in the cooking profession, we kind of go by a Bible that was written by Augustus Escoffier. Now, Escoffier, this guy was back their ways. He actually wrote the menu for the Titanic. I don't think that's why they sunk, but they did have a fabulous meal before it sank. Yeah, and it was 17 courses. I've done it a couple times. It is just for the fun of it. So people could see that type of traditional French cuisine. It, I believe it had frog legs. It had just an asparagus course. It had quite a few different, you know, game birds and things on it. But it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. It was a lot of food, but that's kind of the way they indulged back then. Remember, in everywhere other than America where we eat to live, we eat so we can have more energy to get from point A to point B. And most other places in the world, it's the opposite. You know, they work to eat. You know, they live their lives so they can eat and get together as a family and socialize. And you notice that. You know, you notice that if you've ever done any traveling. But I enjoyed just studying up and being reminded of some of the things. I think some of the more important, you know, larger than life figures, of course, Julia Child. Now Escoffier had French cuisine, and it came in a lot through the southern states, you know, Louisiana. They do a lot of French cuisine down there, etouffee and jambalaya, these sort of things. But the big one that really brought it over and with the biggest fanfare, of course, was Julia Child. You know, and I still remember Julia saying a couple of different things. One was the top three French ingredients. So my sweetheart across from me on the microphone there. You remember the top three French ingredients, right?
Butter.
Okay, that's one.
Butter.
Two.
Butter.
You got it. You know, something else I've always joked about. She had many sayings, but another one that I remember was she had mentioned that, you know, vegetarian food is what I eat while I'm waiting for my steak to cook. And that was Julia Child's quote, one of her quotes.
That would be a nice
and, a good one, and a good one. We'll come right back to Julia and others. But we did have a question get called in on how to make the perfect hard-boiled egg. Do we have that on our website? I thought that I did a video on that, but I also did a video for 60 restaurants when I was a corporate chef at one time. But it is easy to do, and I'm going to walk through it. We'll walk through it a couple times. But bring your body of water to a boil, whatever that is. You want plenty of water. You want four times more water in by volume than you have eggs, because you want the volume, the heat of the water to stay hot for a long time. So you bring it up to a boil, and here's really kind of the secret. You bring it up to a boil, then you shut it off, and immediately take a slotted spoon. Now, that's a spoon with holes in it, and gently lay a couple of eggs in at a time. Lay those down at the bottom. Now, remember, you've shut the water off. It's boiling, which is 210, and you're not cooling it down. You just slowly add in these eggs. And the reason for that is when you add raw eggs to water that's being agitated, you're just going to end up with cracked eggs. And a lot of times the white will leak out and kind of cloud up your water. So you want to add all of your eggs, either one or two at a time, fairly quickly. Turn the water back on, and once it comes to a boil, you can go 12 to 13 minutes, and you're ready to go. And I say 12 to 13 because it might not even be more like 11 to 14, because eggs are quite a bit different size. I mean, a quail egg is basically the size of probably like the length of a quarter. It's the length of the diameter of a quarter. So obviously those don't count. But a smaller egg all the way up to a large, medium large, and double large, anywhere between 11 and 13 minutes. But now count an ostrich egg. Okay, I have poached ostrich eggs before. I used to run an association here in the local North State area of California for emus. You know, it was an emu because it was such a lean cut of meat. This was when people were really talking about, cutting back and their fats and stuff. Now we find out all these years and decades later that fat's good for us, right?
Depends on the fat.
Depends upon
how you
fat.
Treat it.
Yeah, and how much you eat, but it's not, good, solid, well-made fat. We talked last week about the butter you made. That butter was made out of just straight, organic product. Right, I mean, it wasn't pasteurized or the milk. Well, I don't know if the milk was or not, but I mean, there wasn't any additives to it. It was really just a very simple recipe.
Straight cream and yogurt, a little bit of salt.
Cream and yogurt and a little bit of salt, and there you go. And we actually added garlic, chopped garlic to it, and parsley, and turned it into a really nice garlic butter. The white pepper, that was great. But anyway, getting back to finishing up the recipe, you go that 11 to 13 minutes, and then you take them from the boiling water and carefully put them. You don't have to be as careful because now they're cooked. They're cracking them. It's not going to make a difference. But carefully put them into ice water. Let them sit there for 15 minutes or so until they've cooled down pretty much. And then they're much easier to peel when they're warm. I just set a towel on the counter. I just kind of roll them on the towel to crack them. And then I peel them under lightly running cold water. And the peel comes off quick. You just want to get the water in between the egg white, the cooked egg white, and that membrane that's between the shell and the egg white. Once they come right off. But that's the perfect way to do it. And I mean, storage wise, they'll last for at least a couple of weeks. Pop them back in your refrigerator. And remember, two eggs. We should all be eating two eggs in the morning. If you can start off your diet, start off your day with just a couple eggs in the morning. You can do it like my wife and my son do. They'll cook an egg and put it in a shake. I'm not sure how much you can taste it in there. Can you taste it?
That's why I poach it, because I can't taste it. I put it in raw, I can taste it. But if I poach it a little bit, I don't.
Yeah, so they'll cook the eggs and then put them in there. And me, I'll just have my omelet or fried eggs. Is kind of, but anyway, start with those eggs, because it's protein. Again, the white has more protein, about 30% more protein than the yolk does. But either way, eat the whole thing, and that's kind of a medium or a large to an extra large egg, which is kind of what's out there. The prices are coming down.
A quick trick, if you want to poach an egg, we do it in the microwave.
Yeah.
Okay. Take a little dish that's microwave safe, put in 2 tablespoons of water, crack open, put in your whole egg, and then cover it. And then usually running, so I use the eggs that are straight from the chickens, and that cooks for 30 seconds. If it's a cold refrigerated egg, probably 40 seconds. So in about 30 to 40 seconds, you can have a cooked, perfectly poached egg.
Yeah, and that's a great point, is that, and this goes for almost anything you cook out there. There could very likely be a time where you're cooking it out of the fridge, which is a lot different than cooking it, you know, and bringing it up to room temperature first. So bear that in mind. So we're going to go ahead and take our first quick break. We appreciate you calling in with that question. And Cooking Like a Pro, we'll be back in just a moment.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
Save 20 to 30% off all plants at Turtle Bay's 33rd Annual Spring Plant Sale, featuring heirloom vegetables, hard-to-find perennials, shrubs, California natives, and more. The nursery specializes in drought-tolerant plants that thrive in Redding's climate. The members-only sale will take place on Friday, April 4th, 4 to 7 p.m., and the public sale will be held on Saturday, April 5th, 9 to 3 p.m. at 1100 Arboretum Drive. Learn more at turtlebaynursery.org.
You remember when quality mattered more and people advertised low prices? When craftsmanship wasn't just a buzzword, but a way of life. At Cascade Curations, they never forgot. Their hand-selected collections honor that American tradition and the quality you grew up with. Quality clothing and low prices, just like they used to make them. Come see their showroom of men's and women's clothing across from Jack's Grill on California Street. And as always, they have free parking for their customers. Go by and see for yourself. Cascade Curations.
We're back 6 days a week. Since 1938, Jack's Grill is served fabulous steaks. Fork tender filet mignon, New York steak, or brochet of beef, all cooked to perfection and so tender you can cut it with a smile. Deep fried prawns and southern fried chicken. All dinners served with garlic bread, hot baked potato, or french fries. And a large family-style bowl of tossed green salad with a homemade dressing of your choice. Whatever you're in the mood for, meet friends and family at Jack's Grill. Open Monday through Saturday, now with comfortable patio seating. A Redding landmark at their historical location on California Street, downtown Redding.
It's time again for those crazy yellow-shirted asphalt cowboys to suit up for Rodeo Week. This Friday, 5 to 10 p.m., join us downtown at the Whistle Stop Park stage for a wild time at the annual street dance. This year, featuring Ben Haggard and the Strangers. Monday is the Kitty Pet Parade at 6 p.m. in the Mount Shasta Mall. Tuesday morning, keep watch. The Lone Stranger and Sidekick will once again rob a bank and hide their loot. You can win cash by listening to the clues, finding the loot, and unmasking those dastardly scoundrels. Saddle up. They're back for Rodeo Week.
Redding Rodeo returns May 14th through the 17th. 4 nights of rodeo excitement and fun for the whole family. We even added breakaway roping. Get your tickets now at reddingrodeo.com. Bulls, barrels, broncs, and big-time thrills. Thank you to our sponsors, Sierra Pacific Industries, Block Beverage, Pendleton Whiskey, SNL Group, Redding Rancheria, Redding Rodeo, May 14th through the 17th. Get your tickets now at reddingrodeo.com.
Les poissons, how I love les poissons! Love to chop them and to serve little fish.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro, Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Krista here. And we had a question off air, so we'd like to thank that question. It's always nice to get questions, and we got two in a row here. And this had to do with if your chicken has any pink in it, like a steak might have some pink in it. Even pork might have a little pink in it. But if your chicken has some pink in it, that means it's less than 160 degrees, and it takes 160 degrees to kill bacteria. So you want your chicken to always be 160 degrees, which means two things, which means the skin is running, or the juice of the chicken is running clear. And if you don't have a temperature gauge, which you normally wouldn't bring to a restaurant, you're going to want to make sure that there's no pink in there. So no pink. And that goes for all poultry. That would go for game birds. That would go for turkey as well. And then for steak, you know, we always want to look for it to be that juice to rise to the top of the meat when we're cooking a steak, whether on in a broiler, on a saute pan, on a griddle, or maybe out on a barbecue or a grill. We always want that juice to kind of come to the top Once that raises to the top, we know we're at medium. So we're somewhere right around 135, 140. Temperature gauges, you know, they're handy to have, especially at home.
Part two to that question, what started it was, what if you thought the chicken was defrosted, but in the center it was still ice cold, and you've already started cooking it?
Yeah, at that point, especially because it's quite, if it was cooked maybe on the quicker side, then that outside portion is already cooked, then you want to slow it down. So to reduce the temperature and let it keep going and cooking until that pink, until it's no longer pink inside. Because if you keep that high degree of heat, that heat, the activity that's coming from the heat and all those, you know, molecules, you know, jamming back and forth, then you're going to get overcooked and then you're going to get dry on the outside. So you would definitely want to slow it down. Now, you've cooked frozen chicken at home many times and it comes out really good, but you do need to have an indirect thermometer and have, you know, and know that your chicken's done all the way.
Yeah, and that's, you know, something I do a lot is cooking straight from frozen. So either I would say make sure it is all the way defrosted or just go ahead and start cooking straight from frozen because the whole thing is going to be cooking at the same rate.
Now, especially if you're baking, because baking you're not really worried about being pliable. If you're going to cook something in a saute pan or on a grill where it's going to get grill marks on it, it really needs to be pliable in the sense of it needs to be, you know, loose enough where it will, you know, the entire chicken or the entire protein will completely lay flat. And that's what's going to happen.
That particular type of baking from frozen, I do in a simmering sauce so that the whole thing is completely contained.
Yep. But your chicken, no pink. Now, pork, I mean, buy high quality pork. And we used to serve a pork dish. I think it came with a peanut sauce, and it was an Asian-inspired dish, and it came on some kind of an Asian salad with chuka seaweed, and it had a peanut sauce, a sweet chili sauce, and it's been a long time, so I'm trying to remember, but I'm sure there was some rice somewhere in the dish, but we would cook that medium, because I wanted that pork. It was a pork loin. It was a tenderloin, not the whole wide pork loin, but the small little tenderloin. What we kind of call the backstrap. Yeah.
Very light blush pink.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and again, cause you need to trust who you're buying it from. You know, if you're buying it from somewhere, like let's say a large store, something like a Costco or something, you know that they're really going through a lot of product. You know, but if you're driving somewhere out in the middle of the desert and you stop by a gas station and they're cooking and they're, you know, they've got sushi on sale, I mean, the chances that, you know, they're probably greater than not that you're probably going to get sick. So
real quick.
Sure.
Let's just do the numbers really quick. Internal temperature for chicken.
Chicken needs to be up to 160.
Internal temperature for pork.
145, 150.
Internal temperature for a medium steak.
Medium's going to be about 140, no higher than that.
And then medium well?
Medium well is going to, medium, when anything is completely done, completely well, whether it's pork, beef, chicken, whatever, it's 160. It all hits that 160 mark. There's no more, moisture. Most of the moisture inside has been depleted. But your rare or black and blue around 120, 125 is rare. 130, 135 is medium rare to medium. And you just kind of go up from there. But, you know, get a temperature, get an indirect thermometer, stick your thermometer in ice water. So you can, that will calibrate it. When I say calibrate it, it will mean that the degree that it tells you it is, it really is. And I would really, you know, just get a digital one, right? I mean, we have several digital ones. They're more accurate.
And they're not very expensive. So yeah. Two more. Ground beef.
Yeah.
How about that?
Ground beef treat, ground beef as far as doneness, it's going to be the same as your, is your beef, your steak. And I guess, you know, it's hard to illustrate on a radio show where you can't be seen, but if you could just imagine if you're right-handed, cup your right hand like you were holding a softball. And you're gonna touch with your left finger, index finger, you're gonna touch the middle of your palm. So your right hand is holding an imaginary softball. You're gonna touch that middle. That resistance that you get from touching the middle of your palm, that's considered well done when it comes to how hard I have to push down on it. It's kind of like a bloom technique for like gelatin, telling it, you know, whether it's gelatin or whether it's jello or whether it's, you know, a hockey puck. So you're well done. And now start working your way towards the base of your thumb. And you go about a quarter of an inch and you can feel that it's a little softer when you press. Medium rare, another quarter of an inch. Medium, another quarter of an inch. Medium rare, I'm sorry, we go well done in the center, medium well, medium, medium rare, and then rare right at the base of the thumb, where it's kind of the fatter part of your hand. And now if you're at someone's hands and they work with their hands might be a little harder than others, and it's gonna vary, but what you wanna get used to is knowing when something's done by touch. And it's a learned skill, but it's not a very difficult learned skill. You can practice with your hand, and that would be, it will take you a long way to not having to always pull out your temperature gauge.
Last question.
Uh-huh.
Is there an internal temperature for fish, seafood, or is that pretty much all done by sight and by touch?
It's pretty much all done by sight and touch. And, you know, again, you're going to want to get up and, I mean, I like my fish just barely cooked through. So I probably like my fish around 150, 155 at the most. Just because when fish gets dry, its juice is all of its flavor. There's very little flavor in fish that doesn't have any moisture left in it. So at that point, you're pretty much going to have something that's probably pretty overcooked and not real flavorful. So, you know, maybe make sure it's cod. You don't want to spend that kind of money and overcook your halibut. You know, some people will overcook salmon just because they don't like the all the fat that's in the fish. But if your fish is fishy, there's something wrong with it. Okay, this doesn't have anything to do with anything other than there's the quality of the fish. And getting back to Julia Child, I know I had mentioned her at the beginning of the last segment. We talked about her, but there's a variety of people. Alice Waters, if you'd ever been down to Chez Panay, I don't know if I've ever asked you this. Have you ever been to Chez Panay?
No, but I have read her cookbook and I've watched a lot of her cooking videos.
Well, you've been to her. You've been to the area. You've been to Berkeley. Right? So, anyway, but Alice Waters, Chez Panay, she started what we refer to as the slow food. And I remember when it came out, I always kind of joked because I figured if it's slow food, that means it's either, you know,
a snail
or a turtle. Yeah, you know, something that really doesn't go very fast. Something that would be easy to catch. But no, really what that is it's just a matter of having food that's clean, food that's good for you. A lot of food that's artisan, meaning made by, you know, specialty bakers or specialty mongers and, you know, in the fish and meat world. But anyway, so it's that, you know, natural, healthy. That's what you get when you go to Chez Panay. It's a beautiful little restaurant down in Berkeley. And, but Alice Waters started that. And then we also have Rick Bayless. Rick Bayless, really brought true Mexican cuisine to the United States. It wasn't Taco Bell, or anyone like that. Rick Bayless. If you ever get an opportunity to go to one of his restaurants, I've been to a couple, or get anything, you know, watch his videos or something. But Rick Bayless is an amazing, Hispanic chef. Jose Garcia, if you're really into Ecuadorian food, he was one that was real, real popular. As far as Chinese, it was Joyce Chen that did a lot of that. Also, I had an opportunity to meet, Martin Yan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Martin Yan. I got a chance to meet him. I got a cleaver from him. That guy could bone out a chicken in 7 seconds.
We posted that
bone
on one
out
of our,
a chicken in 7 seconds.
Yeah, one of our previous podcasts, if you look it up, we did. I put that video link available.
The video's hooked up to it. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I'd met him at a chef's convention. And then here's one that nobody would have picked. And this is a French chef also. And his name was Etoile Hector, they called him, Boyardee. Boyardee. That was in 1928. And of course, what did he make? He made what I had for lunch today. I had Chef Boyardee raviolis for lunch today. Chef Boyardee was actually a very accomplished chef. He migrated, to the United States. He was born actually in Italy. He had a restaurant, Ohio, it's actually in Cleveland, called Giardino di Italiano. And basically they got real popular for selling spaghetti dinners. But people just kept asking for his sauce recipe and just asking for more take-home versions of it. And And next thing you know, it really took off. But one of the big things he's known for is supporting food rations for the U.S. military after the war. That was a huge thing because he made canned product, in this case, canned raviolis, canned spaghetti, canned sauces, and it was a significant role, again, in supplying what the U.S. military needed during World War II. And then it kind of went on to become an American food. And, so now all about that there was a real Chef Boyardee. And if you still want to hear more about it, look up Paul Harvey. He's got a great story on it. So welcome to Cooking Like a Pro. We'll be taking just a quick break at the bottom of the hour. We'll be back in just a moment.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden, get your ripe ones. Don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer.
The Ramsey Show.
You actually can help people, and you don't help them by giving them a government program. You help them by showing them the way out. People love me enough to put their arm around me and show me a different way. I didn't figure it all out in my own head. So there's a power to hope, but that's not some kind of false panacea positive thinking way. It works. You can't positive think your way into everything, but you can't negative think your way into anything.
Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny, owner of Shasta Gas Propane and a Vietnam veteran. With Memorial Day coming up this 26th of May, I would like to remind you that it is more than a three-day weekend. With the words from President Ronald Reagan in one of his many Memorial Day speeches. He had just received the bodies of four Marines who had died while on active duty. He said, "There is a special sadness that accompanies the death of service members because our country is never quite good enough to them. Not really. We can't be. Because what they gave us is beyond our power to repay. And all we can do is remember. Most of them were boys and girls when they died, and they gave up two lives, the one they were living and the one they would have lived. They gave up everything for us, and all we can do is remember and honor them. This Memorial Day, please remember and honor our fallen service men and women."
Dignity Health and Reading West Rotary present the 18th Annual Taste of Reading 2025, Sunday, June 8th from noon until 4 at the Reading City Hall Sculpture Park. Chefs are preparing their finest foods for you to sample with great wines and microbrews, plus live entertainment on three stages. Get your tickets for food and drink sampling in advance at tasteofreading.org.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. You know, we're going to be talking about Meatloaf, and since I couldn't find a jingle, I just figured I'd pick out one of his songs. But anyway, Meatloaf is, the great thing about Meatloaf is it's a mixture that really just spans almost anywhere in the world. They have some version of it. Especially a lot of countries, it's a delicacy because they don't use a lot of meat. Or maybe that protein is something other than meat. Maybe it's ground lamb, something like what you get when you went to Greece. You'd get, ground lamb and rice, and it'd be a similar to what we would consider in America, a cabbage roll, but they would call it, of course, domas. And if you're having some domas, then you definitely want to have some of that retsina.
No.
Nope, retsina. Oh, yes, you do. You do.
No.
Yeah.
Pine sol turned into alcohol.
No, it was because of the pitch I think it was the Germans that added the pitch. They added the pitch to their own wine because they didn't want the Germans at the war to steal their wine. But then they guess they just got used to it.
Worked.
That's kind of the story I remember off the top of my head. That was from my friend. He goes by Primo. Primo is, because that was in the movie, Big Night, right? because he always called me Segundo. Segundo was second, and Primo was first. So, but that was the story I got from him. So, meatloaf for us in America is just something that's a home style comfort food that, you know, needs some almost some canned corn and mashed potatoes and brown gravy next to it. It's very traditional, always was in our house. Sometimes it's done with more of a red sauce. It's coated with red sauce. Personally, I like meatloaf that's covered with bacon, you know, and then sliced. But there's a wide variety of thoughts. And for me, I've always done my meatloafs in similar to the way I do my meatballs. So it's almost always the same mixture with the similar seasonings and then a binding agent to hold it together. We'll talk about that in a second. But I start off with equal parts ground beef and pork sausage. And because I'm using sausage, which is going to have generally a higher degree of fat, I go with a real lean beef. So get yourself some ground beef. And when I say lean, you can look at ground beef sometimes, it'll say 80-20. When it says 80-20, that means it's 80% beef, 20% fat. If it's 70-30, it's 70% beef, 30% fat. If it's 90-10, again, 90% beef and 10% fat. And the reason you need to know that is because that fat's going to cook right out at some point. So if you start off with, you know, 10 pounds of, you know, 80-20, you're going to end up with 8 pounds of meat because 20 pounds is gone right away in the fat content. So I would get something that's like 93-10 or maybe 90-10 or no, it'd be 93-7. Yeah, I'm not going to brag about where I went to high school, but they didn't teach math. I remember back. I remember that they didn't teach math when I was in school. But I tell you, I'm pretty wicked when it comes to kitchen measurements.
You are very good at kitchen.
Yeah, very good in the kitchen. But anyway, so equal parts ground beef and sausage, and depending on how much you're going to start off with, let's say you're starting off with 2.5 pounds of each, then that's going to give you 5 pounds total. To that, you're going to mince up a yellow onion. You're going to mince up a bell pepper. I like to sometimes use a combination of maybe a red bell pepper and a white and a green bell pepper. You're going to add those in there raw. You're going to add some eggs, and then you need to dry it out. So you're going to use some seasoning, some garlic, some Italian seasoning, some fresh garlic, and some salt. But you're going to need to dry this out because that egg's going to add some moisture to it. Could be a little bit sloppy. And then you dry that out with either Italian breadcrumbs is something that's good. We use panko, the longer or the bigger Japanese breadcrumbs at times.
I use rice.
Rice works. But you'd want to, you know, cook your rice first.
Yes, pre-cooked.
Unless you're really going to cook it a long time. Yeah, I would cook my rice, but I would cook it almost to al dente and then give it time to absorb some of those flavors when you put it in. You know, because you're going to roast it for, you know, an hour, and rice doesn't take that long to cook. So, but I wouldn't, you know, put it in completely done. I think it would disintegrate. I think I'd go to al dente. But a wide variety of things you can do. And I know that the cabbage rolls was just always something I really, really enjoyed. And I don't know how many people even heard of a cabbage roll. But you just blanch you get your green cabbage. You blanch it whole. Maybe cut it in half, but you want large leaves because these leaves, once you steam them and they get tender, you put this ground mixture in there. Kind of think of it as kind of as a log, maybe kind of the shape of a Twinkie, but a little bit smaller. And then just fold up, the cabbage leaf, the cooked cabbage leaves around it, up the sides like you would a burrito, and then roll it up and bake it off with a tomato sauce on top, or I guess some people can use a gravy, but tomato sauce is probably the most palatable.
Would you ever put like a vinaigrette over it?
No, I don't think I'd go with something like that because a vinaigrette is generally going to be for something that's not going to be hot. You know, vinaigrettes will break when you heat them up. So, you know, I know you can add something a little lighter and refresher. I'm not sure if you do. why you want to, simply because if you're making meatloaf, you're already going for meatloaf, mashed potatoes, and gravy. So it's already a menu that's pretty dense to start with. So you probably really wouldn't go for anything lighter. Like last week when we talked about the mango relish. Now if they want to go back and hear, past, conversations from, because we're coming up on a couple months away from a year, I think.
Yeah, we're almost
this
a
podcast.
Year.
Where would they go to get those? Because those don't have any commercials in them.
No, go to Cooking Like a Pro podcast on Spotify or Apple.
Spotify?
There is a podcast Apple. Button. If you have an iPhone, there is a purple button that you, maybe if you haven't listened to a podcast, something you've never seen before.
Do we have one of those little tags you can get, the little picture on an app? Like they have Google Maps. Can we be like Google Map?
We can website.
For the website.
The website,
okay.
Yes.
You can get us on your phone.
Yeah, and you can get the podcast on the website, too.
Very cool. Very cool. So, again, and now one difference I would make on that ratio of beef to sausage would be if I was making an Italian meatloaf. If I was making an Italian meatloaf, I would probably use 3/4 Italian sausage. And remember, Italian sausage, when you get sausage ground, they'll put things in it. So if they just put basically some salt and pepper in, they take the ground pork, they take the pork and they grind it, they might add a little salt and pepper. But if they add, let's say, Italian seasoning to it, now that instead of making what we would call country sausage, Italian seasoning would make it Italian sausage. They can do the same thing with any number of ingredients. They can add paprika and maybe some chili powder to it, and then you have what we call a chorizo, like a Spanish sausage. There's a lot of things they can add to it. I know that I had a pineapple sausage the other day, and it was really good. But again, you can see where they add so many things to it. But basically, pork that has been ground, and then when it's round, when it's bulk, it means it's just in a package, it's ground up. But when it's rounded, that means it's a link, and it's run through something that's called a casein. A casein can be synthetic. Most of them are. If I make my own sausage, I actually use the intestines of other animals, usually a sheep intestines, because they're much more tender when you go to eat them. Sometimes a casein, a synthetic casein, can be a little hard to chew through. Have you ever had a hot dog or a sausage where the skin on it was a little tough?
You have to break it.
Yeah. Dry salami, a lot of times they'll use casein that's too tough. And it's like every time you take a bite, if whoever sliced it didn't take that outside off, it's like you're getting a rubber band.
You can
floss with your dinner.
I actually remember as a kid, we would get the long salami.
Uh-huh.
And we would cut off slices. And the big deal was to take it, each piece, grab that little edging of the casing and peel it off.
Did you ever stop to think to maybe just peel it all off beforehand, before you slice it?
No, I think it was just part of the game.
Because it was fun?
Well, I mean, just think about eating pistachios in the shell. It's kind of the same thing, or sunflower seeds. There's something about getting your hands in there and taking each casing off each slice personally.
But, I think that you were pretty easily
entertained
as a child, yeah.
This was back in the 70s.
Well, yeah, well, hey, I'll tell you, me and my brother Clay and my brother Ben, we used to take the spaghetti and throw it to the ceiling in the kitchen to see if it stuck. And at the time, we never really thought why. And, of course, it's because the starch has come out, so it's sticking now. But we used to do it, and I remember looking up and seeing that. And that's one thing that you just never see. And it's so cool because it means old school. And I don't know how many of you have taken your spaghetti and thrown it against a wall or thrown it on the ceiling to see if it sticks. Because if the starch is coming out of it, then it is done. It is cooked. But that's a good way to tell. Good way to tell. But a variety of items can be added. Any number of vegetables can be added. Matter of fact, you could just use vegetables and not even use beef and just call it a vegetable loaf. But remember, if you're using a vegetable loaf, then you do need to incorporate a protein to really get something that's more solid. And I might use wild rice. I might use oh, I don't know, bulgur, wheat, barley, quinoa, couscous, any of the grains, any really good grain that can be that protein to give it some substance so it holds together. Because, again, that egg – well, remember, vegetables are anywhere up to, like, 97% water. Okay, so they're not adding much. They're adding flavor. They're adding vitamins and minerals. So I'm not saying that's not important. And it can add some fiber, too. But the reality of it is they're not adding much in the way of the bulk, you know, of what it is that you're making. So I'd be a little careful about that. But again, and the liquid you put in there, I know people that put in barbecue sauce, people that add ketchup. But again – you know, you had mentioned rice. You know, rice is always a good one. So, meatloaf. Look up, folks. There's a lot of great recipes out there for meatloaf, and it's fun to do. It's fun to do. Just make sure you're using your good mashed potatoes and get a good gravy, and hey, you're all set to go. So we're going to take our last break here at Cooking Like a Pro. We will be back in just a moment.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, for North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
KIXE PBS and Indie Lens Pop-Up present a free screening of the film Matter of Mind, My Alzheimer's, an intimate portrayal of three families confronting the unique challenges of Alzheimer's and how this progressive disease transforms roles and relationships. Join us May 14th at 5 p.m. at Dignity Health's Connected Living at 200 Mercy Oaks Drive in Reading to watch this important film and to discover what resources are available for families from local brain health partners.
Invest in your future today with a degree or certificate from Shasta College. Get job ready fast with one of our high demand career technical programs like nursing, heavy equipment, and welding. Or work on transferring to a CSU or UC with guarantee placement. Full-time students get 2 years tuition free. Summer session begins June 9th. Click or call 242-7650. Your success starts at Shasta College.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. You know what that smell is? That smell is homemade pizza. We'd like to thank Charlie's Tap House in Anderson for sponsoring Cooking Like a Pro. They can get some great pizzas, cold drinks, and just a real good time down there. Formerly Mary's Pizza Shack, Charlie's is serving up homemade Italian classics just like Grandma and Nani used to make, including authentic pizza, juicy burgers, Italian pastas, and super crisp salads. And they also have some great appetizers. One of the best places in town to go get chicken wings. I love the chicken wings down there. And also creamy gelato. Ran into someone the other day from Germany, and we were just couldn't stop talking about the gelato. And they also have a premier beer wall, epic selection of great beers and refreshing ciders. And if you got kids, head down to Charlie's. They just opened their adventure room a few months ago, and a kit for your kids' favorite birthday needs. And I tell you, they can bounce, jump, play, and massive inflatable playground. They can also become pizza pros alongside Charlie himself, teaching them how to make their own pie. So whether it's date night, a business lunch, or a birthday bash, Charlie's has got you covered. And check in for their rewards program for instant perks. Again, south of town, Shasta Gateway Shopping Center, or go to charlie's.com. Get all the information there. So I wanted to talk a little bit about something that I guess it bothers me in a sense, just simply because I don't think it makes sense why this particular animal can no longer be hunted right now. But that's abalone. Now we were raised on abalone, and when I travel outside of even the western states here, people just, they're clueless as to what abalone is. They don't even, never even heard of it before. And well, it's a mollusk. So when you take seafood and you break it down into the different categories, you have seafood, you have finfish, then you have what we call shellfish. And then shellfish is further broken down into two things, which are called crustaceans or mollusks. So shellfish is a crustacean. A crustacean is a multi-segmented. It's crab and lobster and, what else falls in that category? I was trying to think of another one off the top. Lobster is a big one. Crab and shrimp also, because multi-segmented. So crab, shrimp, and lobster. And then on the mollusk side, things that just have one or two shells. So you'd have your oysters, your clams, your scallops would fall into that category. Those all have two shells. And then you have items or seafood that has just one shell. And that's where the abalone falls into. So it just has one shell. It's still illegal to harvest over here on off the coast of California. It's not going to be legal to harvest until April of 2026 next year. But even that doesn't make sense to me, because when you read the literature, it says that it's either black or white abalone. And my understanding is what we've always harvested is red abalone, because the shells are red. I don't know if that's the same as white. I'm going to have to ask my dad. But anyway, it's delicate. It's a real delicate flavor, completely unlike anything else you'd see. I think a lot of the main reason it went to poaching was really because of, or went extinct, excuse me, or lower in the numbers, was because of poaching. And that was really just the incandescent, the shells. They're just beautiful, and people were harvesting them, and yeah, iridescent. They were harvesting those to make jewelry out of, and variety of things. And because of that, it just, you know, people were after the shells and they depleted it. But that was through poaching, because when you go over and you die for abalone, I think that you could only have maybe two or three towards the end. But our family dove for abalone all the time, and abalone fees were huge, and we actually had it. You were able to buy it out of a place down in Santa Barbara. That is $85 a pound. So to put that in perspective, lobster's around $25 a pound. So a very, very expensive, way up there with one of the more expensive seafoods you're ever going to be able to buy. And, but it was, worth it. I mean, if you enjoy that type of flavor, and what you're talking about for flavor, I'd have to say it was delicious. It was definitely a delicacy. It had kind of a mixture of it certainly had the flavor. It had kind of a briny flavor to it, but at the same time, it had this rich, buttery flavor and texture to it. So kind of like what you'd expect a mollusk to be, but very delicate and really, you know, a little bit of lemon. I mean, there isn't much else that you need to put on it. Remember, when you get to these very expensive high-end proteins, it'd be kind of like, you know, the most expensive beef is either Wagyu. It'd be like going to get a Wagyu steak and putting, you know, ketchup on it. That would be the same thing as getting abalone and putting tartar sauce on it. But we did have, on my first restaurant, or rather our first restaurant, Di Mercurio's, we had an abalone sandwich. And it was just like a small little slider, but it was $50. But if you were really in it was a BLT, bacon, lettuce, tomato, and abalone. Oh, was it good? It was good. But, you know, we had it at a variety of our restaurants, you know, our different menus, I should say. hard to get. I mean, you know, an abalone will grow up to 4 years, but it only grows about an inch a year. And an abalone has to be 7 inches long, lengthwise, in order to be legal. And, you know, so it takes a while for them to get there. When they're poached, I guess they can be, depleted. But I am looking forward to the season opening back up. Hope I'm still around.
But you can get it from Monterey Abalone Company.
Yeah, you can get it. Last time I called them, they didn't have any. But, I know that there was a place that we looked up that it was $50 a pound, but it was whole abalone. Was that Monterey?
That's the Monterey one.
That's probably why, Bert Catino and his flagship restaurant, the Sardine Factory, has abalone bisque on there. Abalone bisque, it was actually world famous abalone bisque, made famous, when they served it at the inauguration for President Nixon. So yeah, so it was one thing that's on the menu there. I would highly recommend it. So, what country do you think eats the most abalone?
Oh, well, if it's seafood, now this is a warm water, right? It's not cold water.
Yeah, well, the cold water the better. It grows in a varied range,
but it's right there on, you're going to the reefs. You're going right on the border.
It's right on the edge of the
ocean. You're not going deep diving for it. Yeah. So
the people eat most is
China. Oh, okay.
China. There's no prize. So you can just get. But yeah, it China eats more than anywhere else. And I know that a lot of the Chinese restaurants, I think that's where, if you were asking me and I was a game warden, I think that's where a big problem landed in Asians poaching. Because we'd see them out there when we were getting our legal abalone, pretty much grabbing everything in sight, and that was sad. You know, we do make a dish that was real popular, and we call it poor man's abalone. Now, have I ever made that for you?
No, is it the same as what I grew up with called mock abalone?
Yeah, mock abalone poor. So the chicken that's been pounded out to break all that connective tissue, get it real tender, and then there's a lot of acid in clam juice, and so you soak it for 3 days in clam juice, and it just melts in your mouth. I flip it once a day, and you know, just soak it in that clam juice, drain it out of the juice. You know, if you want to dredge it with a little bit of flour or flour, egg, and panko, or just do it, you know, and cook it in butter. I would put some kind of flour on it because you want something to cook to the outside generally on something like that because it's going to be very tender. The gluten in the flour kind of help hold it together.
So you're going to pan sear that?
Yeah, pan sear it. Get your oil hot. That's the biggest mistake that people make by far, hands down, is not allowing the oil to be the correct temperature before you add the protein or whatever you're cooking. Could be cooking vegetables, potatoes. I don't care. The oil needs to warm up. Because when it doesn't warm up, it's just soaking oil.
Temperature should be what temperature?
Well, I always tell by flicking it. You know, I get a little bit of water on my fingers and I'll flick it in there. But I think that you can put your hand over, and I'm used to cooking, you know, nonstop, you know, through an entire shift. So I don't have time to sit there and check the temperature. I just hold my hand over it. And I hold my hand about 8 inches above it, and you can feel the heat. Really, the heat should be the same amount of intensity whether there's a pan there or not. That tells you that you're up to proper heat. You can also see a little bit of a shimmy, a little bit of shimmer on there.
But we talked earlier about having instant read thermometers. We have a laser thermometer that is very awesome.
Yeah, they're called infrared, and they will check the surface temperatures. It's kind of like, you cook pancakes at 3 1/4, you know, you cook, hard crack candies need to go to 375. You know, as far as what's the temperature of hot, 148 to 150. So I think for oil, you probably want to get around 170, 180. What you want is you don't want it smoking. Okay. So, I mean, the pans are different thicknesses. There are a wide variety of different oils and or butters you could put in there. But whatever it is, you do not want it smoking. If you're getting ready to cook something and the pan is smoking, stop, start over. When I say start over, I mean dump the pan out if there's even anything in it. Let it cool down, clean it, and start over. Not just dump it out because that smoke has broken down the oil, and now that oil is going to give off a completely undesirable flavor.
Now, if you do get a hold of that $50
singe flavor,
$50 abalone from Monterey, How would you cook it?
Slice it thin. You don't have to worry too much about the grain because the grain almost always goes up and down. So you can cut it round or cut it up, straight like you'd cut a steak sitting there. You have to basically look at something that's kind of like a flat football shaped. And then you trim off all the black on the outside, and then you cut it real thin, and then you pound it real well. Now, when it has not been frozen, it's way much better. Okay, once it's been frozen, it can be a little tougher. So you do need to pound it out pretty good for that. But anyway, abalone, I know that hopefully we're going to get a chance to go back and go diving again, or at least maybe buy some for one last abalone feed. I don't know. Maybe I'll learn to dive. I just picked rocks back in the day with grandma, but maybe when the season opens back up in a year, we'll do that. But anyway, we want to just tell you, we appreciate you listening. And, where can they find us here? Cooking Like a Pro?
Cooking Like a Pro podcast can be found on Apple and Spotify.
Apple and Spotify, and then our website and a variety of other things. You can pretty much find it out there. Just look for Chef Cal or Chef Krista, and we appreciate you again listening to Cooking Like a Pro. God bless you and yours, and we will talk to you next week.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.